Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
That's 503-417-7626. So give us a call. Your calls are what make this show go. This is where you get a chance to call in, ask us a question. There is no foolish question when it comes to your money or your estate taxes. And speaking of estate taxes, in studio with me is Carl Jepson, with the partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm and estate planning attorney. Carl?
Good morning, Chuck. It's nice to be here. And I see an empty chair next to me today. So Kevin must be, speaking of taxes, must be deeply embroiled in the preparation of tax returns.
Yeah, we are probably going to be without Kevin for the next month or so, maybe a little longer because of tax season. And he is, I talked to Kevin because he is also my CPA, but he is burning the midnight oil, and he told me he's got his cot there at the office. So he's basically working 24/7 and maybe getting a few hours of sleep in between.
Well, you know, actually, Chuck, yesterday Kevin and I exchanged information over a voicemail, and he asked me a question that I think I knew the answer to, but it really fits, I think, somewhat more in your bailiwick, and that is that he was concerned, one of his clients was concerned about a joint stock account that they had opened up with a broker, but they weren't married, and they had and they didn't really have any kind of estate plan, and one of the partners died and left this joint account, and then they had his account, and each person had their own account, and then they had this joint account as well. And somehow the brokerage was not turning over all of the money because they wanted to know which of the stocks were his and which of the stocks were hers. And he wanted to know, you know, is that really the right way to treat that? And my impression would be absolutely not. A joint account is a joint account.
Well, they would either have it as a joint accounts with rights. They should have had it with rights of survivor,
right,
or tenants in common. But
yeah,
but either way,
I mean, as a general rule, an account is a joint survivorship account almost by definition.
Yeah, but you need to make that designation on a brokerage account.
Mm, okay, well, maybe that's what they're talking about.
But even so, if it was tenants in common, it would still go. It would still go over, wouldn't it?
No,
it wouldn't.
Tenants in common would be an undivided interest of the whole.
Well, see, that's what they probably did then. The broker probably set it up just a joint account, tenants in common, instead of with rights of survivor. Because if you don't ask for the rights of survivor, you don't get it.
Wow.
And the same thing is true with, that's why we always set up our brokerage accounts with a TOD on it,
mm-hmm.
a transfer on death, and we have beneficiaries, mm-hmm. because then automatically it's with rights of survivor. One dies, it goes to the other.
Exactly.
But if they both die, then it avoids probate and goes to somebody else.
I like your solution a lot better, actually, in those cases. But for example, if you set up a joint bank account, it's always with survivorship. I mean, by definition, it's a survivorship account. So,
well, securities are a different animal.
So if Kevin is up, and I'm guessing he is, I'm sure he's diligently you know, doing the numbers and listening to us answer his question.
Yeah, and he can very simply have the client call the brokerage company and find out how it was actually set up. Mm. It'd be pretty easy. It won't tell you on the statement. It'll just show
right,
the names.
Right.
But you need to call. He needs to call the brokerage accountant. Sounds like to me somebody may have set the account up incorrectly.
Well, and this is one of those things that I ask my clients to do, and I know that you do on your reviews, is to review the TODs and the beneficiary designations on all of the assets, because sometimes they aren't set up, or you think they're set up the way you wanted them set up, but in fact, when you go back and maybe three or four clerks later, or the company's been changed, or they've moved, or who knows what, either they've lost it, or they didn't get it set up in paper the way that you thought it was, and then you may have a problem. So, for example, in this situation, if it is, in fact, tenants in common, and the deceased and the surviving person is only entitled to half, well, then that means that that in order there has to be a will or something in order to transfer the second half to, or the third half if you're a car guy, to the survivor.
Surviving. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So, and that would then conceivably require even a probate or a small estate, depending on how much was in it.
Yeah, I mean it's you got to make sure on a brokerage account per se. Brokerage accounts are set up as individual ownership or joint tenants, and you have to request the rights of survivor. And that's what we tell people. You've got to make sure you're setting up your titles correctly. Because
absolutely.
If you don't, and this I know is, for my clients, is kind of monotonous, because once a year we try to go over with each of our clients their beneficiaries and update them. And sometimes you find that maybe a daughter got remarried and there's a name change. You know, something happened. They maybe have changed their mind on who they want to leave their funds to, and you have to make those changes. Mm-hmm. But you have to ask, because people generally don't do it unless they're urged to do it.
That's right, and it's one of those things that we have seen in practice a number of times, is that what they thought was the case, what they thought was the TOD or the beneficiary designation, was inaccurate or wasn't there at all. And so it's not at all a bad thing to go into your institution or call them or whatever it is and make sure that you verify it. But I like to see them get it verified in writing, just simply because, you know, get a copy of the designation that they signed or something, and just at least, or if they got it in the first place and they still have it and they know they have it and they haven't changed it, then they should hang on to it and, you know, keep those things in the same place so that if the issue comes up later, they can at least try to get the thing fixed.
Yeah, unfortunately, most people don't know the questions to ask their financial planner or their broker to make sure they're doing it correctly, and they count on that person setting up the account to ask them the right questions to get it done correctly.
Exactly. Yeah, and they assume, and a lot of times, you know, for example, if you go into most banks and you say to them, I want to put my daughter on my account so that she can pay my bills if I need her to do so, that is almost 100% of the time they will put that as a joint account. And that may not be the best way to do that. So just ask.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to ask. You know, I tell all my clients this, and some of my clients think I'm a little crazy about this, but I tell them, look, when we get together, you should have a list of questions. You need to ask me the questions that are important to you. Anything that keeps you up at night, you need to write it down and ask me about. Because if we don't get it answered, you're going to be worried about it. You don't want to be doing that. You don't want to be that person. You want to be the person that sleeps good at night, their head hits the pillow, they go to sleep. And the only way you do that is to know you have everything planned out properly.
You know, you and I have the same kind of philosophy with respect to our clients, and that is that we want them to ask as many questions as they can and can think of. And we would never discourage. I can't imagine discouraging my clients from asking questions, because, you know, it's their money and it's their estate, and they need to know. And if they don't understand something or they're not quite sure of something and they want to ask the question, it's my job to answer it. And I keep trying until they understand it.
Well, I say on our show, there's no foolish question when it comes to your money or your estate plan, and there isn't. If it's a worry to you, I tell you, we have the answer, and if we don't have the answer immediately, we will find it. But I never want to discourage my clients from asking me a question.
Which, is on thinking of that, we never, in fact, we do the opposite here on this radio show. We want to encourage all your questions because that's what makes this fun and what makes it interesting to you, hopefully. So if you wanted to get in touch with us right now, you can call us at 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750. And we would love to have your call about just about anything. And if we know, we'll tell you. If we don't, we'll find out.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, if you want to call us today, I will do a special offer today. If you want to call us and ask a question and you want to stop by my office, I will give you a free book. I will give you a free book called Investing Simplified. And Carl, you have a chapter in there.
Well, I do. I was going to say, I heard that you had a pretty good chapter on estate planning.
That's correct. Yeah, since you wrote it, yes. Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, it's the highlight of the day. I'm serious. If you want a copy and you call in and ask a question today, leave your name, and you can stop by my office. You don't need to set an appointment or anything. Just stop by the office and say you called in the show. I'll have a just give us your name. And I'll even sign it for you and leave it at the desk, and you can stop by the office any day and pick it up for free. And free is a good price.
Indeed it is.
And I could tell you, I've had, you know, Carl, speaking about that, I had a person come in off the show, called me, came in, did a review, went over their portfolio, and I told them, in all honesty, they had a really good portfolio, but I did give them a copy of the book, and I said, you know, look at it, and then I did a little review of his investments, and his investments for somebody who's retired are more volatile than our portfolio, but he had a nice balanced portfolio, and he said, you know, it's amazing because all my two other advisors that I have, both of them have been telling me I need to get rid of the other guy and move all my money over to them, but you're not even with me, and you're telling me, hey, this is not a bad, you've got a pretty good investment portfolio. And I said, listen, if we don't have honesty, we have nothing. I mean, you've got to be honest with people, and you can't tell them their portfolio sucks if it doesn't. I mean, you really got to be straight up about it. And this is my question to you. If somebody tells me it is bad, get a second opinion. I tell my clients, I don't mind if they get a second or a third opinion, but if somebody's telling you to make a change, get it in writing. Get it in writing, because if they're wrong, you can go back on them and say, hey, you told me to make these changes, and here's my old portfolio, and here's my new one. So get it in writing. If they're not willing to put it in writing, it's not worth doing.
You know, it is a much more of a consumer's world today, and I certainly think the same thing about my practice. If someone doesn't feel comfortable with what I've told them, or if they don't, you know, don't like the advice I've given them, and they, I would encourage them to go see another, you know, lawyer, and find out, because quite frankly, some, you know, people, there are certainly room for people to disagree, and professionals do it all the time. There were jokes about, you know, putting five lawyers in the same room and getting five different answers to the same question, and I mean, there's a possibility of that, because there are some, you know, there are details and things that come into play, but nonetheless, I mean, I think that there are a lot of times where the central idea should come through basically the same for good people who know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's the same thing with financial planning. There are some basic rules. I mean, we can all have a little bit of differences about maybe the fund we might pick or the investment vehicle we might pick, but when it comes to planning, it's pretty much the same. And there's a lot of things you can get on online, too, where you can look and see what independent places offer out there and have available that you can look at, and I encourage my clients to look at those things. Sometimes there's some pretty good ideas, but I do want to talk about a couple of things here about the market, and I want to talk about what's going on in the marketplace right now, because we have, if you haven't been watching, the stock market is like a very extreme roller coaster right now. The markets are going up, they're going down, they're going up, they're going down. This is a very unsettling time, and that's because there's a lot of uncertainty in the market, and uncertainty causes volatility. Now, here's the other thing I do want to caution you about. There are a lot of advisors out there that scare the bejesus out of people and tell them, gee, you don't want to lose all your money, so we're going to stick your money in this annuity, and you can't lose your money. I got news for you. Cash that annuity out early and see if you can't lose your money. There's usually a 10% or higher surrender charge right up front, and it usually goes for 10 years. So if you want to pull your money out in 10 years, you are probably going to lose some money. There's a pretty good bet on it. To me, annuities are probably the most missold investment vehicle I have ever seen. Number one, an annuity is not an investment. And I'm talking about a fixed indexed annuity. If somebody tells you it's an investment, they are lying to you. They are breaking the law. It is not an investment. Mandated by the United States Congress, they declared that a fixed indexed annuity is not a security. Therefore, it is not an investment. And if somebody tells you it's an investment, no, it's not. A variable annuity is an investment. It's a security. It's regulated by the SEC and FINRA and by the Securities Exchange. And that vehicle fluctuates just like a stock or any other investment. So we in our practice, we use annuities for an income benefit to guarantee lifetime income. We do not use it as an investment vehicle. We tell our clients, look, this annuity is set up to give you lifetime income. That's what it's designed to do. And if you don't want to lose sleep at night and you need to have X number of dollars coming in every single month, that's what an annuity does. Every one of us owns an annuity. It's called Social Security. You do not have a choice when you retire to say to the government, hey, I paid into this thing for 50 years. Now, I want my money back. And they're going to say to you, oh, no, contraire, you get an annuity. We're going to give you a payment, and we're going to pay it as long as you live. And when you die,
we keep the rest.
We keep the rest. Yeah, that's right.
Well, of course, actually, that and a cup of coffee, or 50 cents gets you a cup of coffee. So, you know.
Well, I don't know where you've been buying coffee
well,
at,
you know,
Carl.
Yeah, excuse
probably
me.
Probably a $1.95.
Yeah, well, or $4 or whatever.
Well, yeah, you go to Starbucks, yeah. It might be 10. But it is quality coffee. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. But the point is, when you're investing money, understand the difference between an investment and an insurance product. They are not the same. And we have insurance guys out there and brokers out there who are calling indexed annuities investments, and they are not investments. That is a blatant untruth. And Carl, I see so many seniors that these guys jam into these 10-year annuities where the people can't get their money out for 10 years. And I did an analysis for a client, actually, that will be talking to you, too. They had been told that their annuity was going to pay 7-8%. And I went back and showed them that, you know, for the first 2 years, that annuities averaged 2.5%. That is not a great return, folks. That's not an investment return. Now, it's a little less than the S&P's done over the last 14 years. But the S&P's got a lot more greater upside potential than that annuity. So it's not an investment. And I just tell you, if you got one of those and somebody told you it was an investment, come see me because I'll be glad to talk to you about it. But if they did it for income, and we tell our clients, look at this, they're for income. They're designed to pay you lifetime income you can't outlive. And there are some people who do not want to see their money go up and down. They just want that monthly check. They don't want to have an investment portfolio. And listen, if you've ever invested in a 401k or an IRA or a real investment, a stock or a bond investment, I guarantee you that sometime in your lifetime, you've seen negative returns on that. You've looked at your statement and said, holy crap, I'm down 10% or 20%. Or if you're in equity stocks, you may be down 30 or 40. But you've seen it. You may not have realized you've seen it, but you have seen it. And that's why it's called an investment. Investments go up and down. Understand your risk management. I have a great white paper on my website at pfgwm.com, or you can type out pricefinancialgroupwealthmanagement.com. And you go on there, there's a white paper about risk and reward. You need to read that and understand your risk tolerance. Can you accept risk fluctuation? If you can, you will be better off long term. If you can't, that's okay. Understand where you feel about your investments, because I'm going to tell you what, logic has nothing to do with it. It's all emotion in between your ears. Perception is reality. If you perceive it sucks, it sucks. If you don't, then you're okay. But you have to understand yourself, and you have to know yourself, and you have to be able to say to your advisor, listen, I know I could take a little bit of risk. I don't want to be locked up for 10 years in that annuity contract where I'm going to make maybe, 3% or 2%. I want to make a little higher yield, but I can understand that, there might be any given year I might be down 4 or 5%, but long term I'm going to make, 6 to 8%. Now that's an investment. Investments are not guaranteed. They fluctuate, go up and down. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break. If you've got a question about your investment portfolio, or you want us to look at a stock or a mutual fund, I'll be happy to put it online here for you, and we'll do an analysis of it. But give us a call at 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750. Thank you very much for listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be right back with Carl's comments.
We do Investing Simplified.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. Today I'm going to tackle a question that's a little bit challenging. This is, the stuff of which lawsuits are often made. And I just want to discuss and maybe analyze some of the thoughts that you might have about a particular question. And that question is why parents sometimes treat their children unequally in their estate plan. And then if we can get that far, we can talk about what, if anything, can be done about it. This isn't all that uncommon where you have a will or a trust or just the way that people set things up. Like, for example, they maybe have a house and then they have some investments and an IRA or something like that. And maybe they give all of the cash stuff by beneficiary designation to one child, and maybe then they divide the house equally between the two. Well, that's a fair disparity, depending on how much money we're talking about. Or sometimes a parent may just cut somebody out entirely. They may just decide that they're not going to, give them anything at all. Or in other situations, they'll give them money in that's contained in what we would call a testamentary trust that limits their ability to access that money and, kind of protects them from themselves in a way. And a lot of times that You know, many times the person who gets the short end of the stick, you know, basically says, well, mom must have been crazy if she did that, you know, number two, or you know, my brother must have just twisted her arm to do that, because otherwise she would have never done such a thing.
Do you ever hear the Tommy Smothers
mother loved you best? Mom loved you better.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just because they did something odd like that, or did something that was not totally equal, if they were competent, they had an absolute right to do that. And as long as they weren't being unduly influenced or defrauded. But so, you know, that's what I want to do. So what exactly, why would this happen? Why would a parent, you know, treat their child unequally? And well, one of the things I got to kind of list, sometimes there's mental illness or a personality disorder that just doesn't make it very prudent for them to give money to this person at all. Sometimes there's a substance abuse problem. Sometimes there's just plain bad financial judgment on the part of the child, and they don't want that money that they spent their lifetime accumulating, you know, being, you know, squandered on, you know, lottery tickets or something else, you know. So it may be a situation where they would love to give the money to their child, but the significant other is such a bad guy or a bad girl that that they know that if the child has access to it, the significant other is going to squander it on his or her particular vice. And there may be a situation where a child has some criminal conduct that has so offended mom and dad that they just can't see themselves justifying, you know, kind of rewarding that kind of behavior. And sometimes maybe just the child's general behavior has something to do with it. So then, now there are other circumstances. Maybe mom and dad have become incapacitated. Maybe they really don't know quite what they're doing, and they're an easy target for someone suggesting something else. Maybe they do have a sibling or two, or another, or a relative, or somebody who is, you know, joined the family and who has basically isolated mom or dad and has told them that nobody loves them except the people that they are, and that the siblings are no good and they're just out for your money and you ought to give me the house. I mean, that's a common kind of circumstance, you know, maybe some of the siblings have gone even further than that, have tricked mom and dad into signing some kind of a loan or signing some kind of a bank account to them or something like that, you know, maybe mom and dad are just not very nice. That could be it. Although then there's the other thing. Maybe you should have been nicer to mom and dad. You know, I mean, you never know.
Take your pick.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those kinds of things. But those are the kind of reasons that we talk about. And they're very real situations that are problematic for all families. Because sometimes, you know, the parents have some expectations that the child feels are unreasonable, and if they're not met, the parent, you know, tries to sort of, I think, manipulate them into conformance by, you know, writing a new will. You know, I'm going to write a new will. I mean, it's like a television show or something. But anyway, that's kind of the kinds of things that I see day in and day out, and it sounds like it might be a little bit exotic, but it really isn't. You know, like you said, sometimes, you know, maybe mom did love you better. I don't know. But what can be done about it? Well, this is one of those areas that can be really problematic. For example, if the parent is really competent and say the one child finds out that mom and dad have just done a new estate plan, which basically cuts them out or treats them in some way that they believe is totally unfair and clearly must be the product of something, some kind of wrongdoing. Well, the problem is there that if the parents are truly competent, they're going to have a devil of a time trying to prove otherwise. And if they do, if they think that what it is that because the other siblings have essentially gone into some kind of wrongful conduct that has convinced mom and dad or mom or dad to, you know, essentially cut them out, and they're still alive. Well, then you have a few choices. You can file a complaint for elder abuse, or you could, if you believe that they're incapacitated, you can file a case for having a guardian or conservator appointed. Now, I want to tell you that doing either one of those things, if you're wrong, is opening the gates of family hell. I guarantee it. And the expense and time and trouble will haunt you for the rest of your life. I guarantee it.
That's like breaking a big mirror. It's not going to get put back together.
It's not going to make any, you know, so you better darn well be sure about that one. There's also a claim under the law that's called, it's got a wonderful name, but I don't think it's all that great, quite frankly. It's called intentional interference with prospective inheritance. Doesn't that sound pretty? But it's based on what we used to call intentional interference with economic advantage. And the Oregon Supreme Court has basically said there isn't really such a thing as prospective, you know, that you can have a claim for this, but it's basically the same thing as intentional interference with prospective economic advantage. Now, having said that, it's extraordinarily difficult to prove this. You have to prove, first of all, that the people who were doing it, that you're accusing of doing whatever they did it absolutely intentionally with the purpose of interfering and obtaining their, you know, getting the inheritance. Number two, it has to be by some kind of improper means or purpose. Well, what does that mean exactly? I mean, it has to be something kind of wrongful. Being nice to mom and dad isn't necessarily wrongful. So, you know, that's a little difficult to figure. Then the other one is causal connection. Was this behavior on the part of the so-called perpetrator the cause of this, you know, of this change or not? Was it just because mom and dad wanted to do that because they loved you better? You know, I mean, I don't know. And then finally, are there really damages? And here's a real problem. You can't really prove damages because a person can change their will any time. A will is always revoked, always revocable. So basically, you couldn't tell if there was any kind of damages until the person dies. So you got a real problem with that kind of thing, and it is real challenging. If after they die, the remedy is looking at the will and seeing if there was some kind of fraud, a procurement in the will, or some kind of undue influence or incapacity that makes the will invalid. But there again, those are very difficult cases. I'm not saying they're impossible, but they're extremely difficult. So I guess if I had one piece of advice for all children, I guess it goes back a long, long way. And you'll probably recognize this. This is a statement from way back in history. And it basically says this. It's the fourth of 10. And it says, honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land and the Lord your God has given you.
Wow. I wasn't there when that was written, by the way.
Well, no, me either. But you know,
it was written a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of things, you know, that you I think every now and then we get wrapped up so much in. I think in our world here in the United States, particularly, I think we're a kind of consumer society, and we want stuff, and we're told on the TV that we want stuff, and whether we do or not, and it's hard to live without money. I mean, the economic times can be very difficult, but it tends to, you know, diminish and sometimes overcome our best nature with respect to the people that we love. And when it does that, then it gets ugly. And so kind of think about what you're doing and try to place your money where your heart should be.
Well, you know, Carl, you brought up some really good points, or a lot of points, but one of the things I constantly see in my practice, and I know you do, we have clients come in and they'll bring in their investment portfolios, and we'll be looking at them, and I always have them bring in their will or their trust if they have one. And what they always tell me is, well, we have all of our beneficiaries in our will. And I said, well, yeah, but understand your investments or your IRAs or your 401k, those do not go by will. Their beneficiary is what it is, and it's irrevocable at death. We cannot go in and change it when you die. So we need to make sure it is set up properly, because if we don't, it won't be what you think it is.
You know, that's absolutely true, and it's interesting because it's one of those things that sometimes you say that, you know, somebody comes in and says, oh, well, you know, I want to do my will, and I want all of these things, and I want my IRA to go to, and I want my bank accounts to go to, and I say, well, do you have beneficiary designations? Well, yeah. Well, the will doesn't cover those, and they kind of, you know, their eyes get kind of wide, and it's like, oh. And so, you know, what's an interesting I think little known fact is that the state of Washington has actually a device. I've never seen it used, and I would be so nervous about trying to use it that it would make me crazy. But they have what they call a super will. And the super will allows you to basically say, I don't care what my beneficiary designations say. I want this IRA or this bank account or this stock account to go to XYZ. And they say that works. I've never worked with it, so, quite frankly, I'm not sure I'd ever do it because I think you're just asking for a big whole kettle of worms. It's always better to have your beneficiary designations totally consistent with your will so that you don't have any trouble.
Yeah, there's a lot of litigation out there on wills and beneficiaries, and I've not heard of one getting turned over by a will. From a beneficiary,
it's pretty rare, I've never seen it. I don't do as much practice in Washington as I do here, and maybe some of the Washington practitioners could tell us different. But my own personal feeling would be I would be really nervous about trying to recommend that to a client.
Well, we always say you got a CYA, and that's cover your assets and make sure that you are protected. And if in doubt, do it the old-fashioned way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And incidentally, if you do want to give us a call, we do have a caller here. We have Vicky from Gresham is a caller on the line. Vicky, are you there?
Yeah, this is Vic.
Oh, Vic, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yep.
I'm calling about a mutual fund.
Sure.
And one of the shows that comes on Saturday speaks highly of this fund, and I'd like to get your take on it.
Oh, absolutely. What is it?
Okay. It's the James Balanced Golden Rainbow.
Do you have the symbol?
GLRB as in boy, X.
Okay, it's GLRB.
BX.
BX. I'm playing with a new keyboard here. I've never used one before, and it's totally different than my keyboard at the office, but I'm going to hope that I can hit it right here. Let me see. Okay, I just pulled it up. It's James Balanced Golden Rainbow.
Yes.
And let's take a look at it and see how long it's been around. As you know, my theory is if you've been around, how long you've been around is important because then that tells us how you performed in good and bad markets. This fund actually came out, it looks like, in the 90s. And if you had bought this fund... Just so you understand volatility of the fund, when it hit a high in June of 97, the fund never got back to that until about 2011. So a lot of short-term volatility, but if you're buying the fund long-term, that's a golden opportunity because, Vic, I know that you've called us before. One of the things I say about funds is I don't like putting lump sums in a fund. But I love dollar cost averaging into funds. And this is a fund that if you dollar cost average into it, you'd have made a lot of money. But I wouldn't have wanted to stick a lump sum in it back on June of 97, and then I have my money get back to where I was on the basic principle of it until 2012. So a lot of volatility. Right now it looks like to me it's going up and has had a great run since 2011.
Yeah, well, from what I'm looking at, it's just a $2,000 minimum investment in it, and I'm looking at the 2008. It says it was down by 5.5% in 2008. You know, as contrasted with the overall market being down like 30-some percent.
Yeah, but let me give you the rest of the story here, Vic.
Yeah, okay. That's what I'm interested in.
Yeah. Okay, it hit a high on September 07 of 1889, and it went down on February 9th to 1512.
Okay,
so that's three of 18, so that's 1/6, that's about 17%.
Yes, okay.
And then it took... When it went down in 07, it had a very good recovery, though. When it went down in 07, by 2000 and July of 2010, it was back to the 1889. So about a 3-year recovery there.
Okay, so it did.
Better than average, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, average fund was, you know, five and a half years. So this, they call it a balanced fund, but you're talking about gold and you're talking about precious metals.
Okay,
to me, even though they're calling it a balanced fund, to me it's still an aggressive fund in my mind.
Okay.
It's because it's in gold and precious metals. And I think any time you go there, you're going higher risk.
Okay.
So, it's a golden rainbow. James calls it a balanced fund, but it's a volatile fund. But, you know, I think that is a nice little fund where if you don't put a lot of money in it and you buy it on the dips, and this is hard for people to do, but I know you, and I know you're a disciplined investor, which most people are not. But if you put some money in this, and it'd be worth putting a few bucks in it. But just whenever you see it take a dip, dump some money in it.
Okay.
Because you'll make money long term, and you're a fairly young guy yet. You still got lots of time.
Okay. Well, that's what I was wondering about, Chuck. I didn't know. Just kind of dollar cost average in and buy on the dips and.
Yeah, and I think you'd be fine. This is not a fund I would stick a $100,000 into. I can tell you.
No,
because,
no, I was more maybe $2,000 or $3,000, and then a little bit at a time, you know, just maybe up to a maximum of 10,000 at the.
This is what I call a fun money fund.
Okay.
You can buy into it, buy it on the dips, and you'll be rewarded.
Okay.
If you stick a bunch of money in it, you'll be penalized. Okay.
Thank you very much.
You bet, Vic. Great question. Great question. Thank you very much for calling. You know, folks, we try to tell you the way it is on a fund, and I'm not just going to tell you every fund's bad. This fund is long-term, has done pretty well, but it's a fund that I wouldn't have wanted to stick a bunch of money in it, especially prior to 97, because I wouldn't have had it back till 2011. That's a long time. But if somebody had bought that fund in dollar cost average, they'd have made a load of money. They'd have made some pretty good returns. So not always does a fund going down mean bad things. If you're a long-term investor, you buy on the dips, you hold on the highs. Like right now, there's no dips out there. So there's nothing to buy on the dip right now. You don't want to be dip searching right now. But you want to be holding. You want to be holding. You got to know when to hold them and when to fold them, right?
Yeah.
I think Kenny Rogers said that very well.
Yeah, you don't want to play poker with him, though.
No, you don't. No, he'd drive you crazy. Well, listen, you're listening to Investing Simplified. Great question by Vic. If you've got a question, pick up the phone, give us a call. Like Carl and I have both said, there is no foolish question when it comes to your money or your estate planning. Give us a call, 503-417-7626. 503-417-7626, toll-free 800-990-0750. And listen, if you are getting close to retirement and you want to know about Social Security maximization, you can go to my website at pfgwm.com. There's a seminar you can watch. We call it a seminar on demand. You can watch it in the comfort of your home. You can get all the information you want. Then if you want to do a maximization on yours, we provide one free of cost. And you just need to bring us some information, and we'll run the analysis for you, no obligation. So we'll be right back. We're going to come right back with the Knowledge Trust.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over 3 decades, and its 9 attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
My name is Money.
Gotta love that song, and if you've never seen that YouTube on that, I really recommend you go on YouTube and look up that video. My name is Money, and you will enjoy the. It's really neat the way they did that. She's out there singing in the outdoors and got a little hat there, and people and a lot of music stars drop money in the little hat while she's singing that song, and she's trying to collect money. That's what she's singing about. But listen, there's some important things going on in the market, and there's some things going on, and I listen to other shows, believe it or not, I listen to other financial shows because I like to hear what they're saying and what they're doing, and I have to tell you, in all honesty, I'm not real excited about some of the stuff I'm hearing on there, and I'm going to tell you why. I run the stock market report, and I'm going to give you an update real quick. The Dow Jones closed at 18,019.35. So where do we stand on the Dow Jones versus the turn of the century on 12/31/99? The Dow Jones is up 4.02% a year. We'll get a call here from Kathy, so we're going to go right to Kathy. Kathy, you got a question?
Yeah. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. I'm a federal retiree, and when I have to take my RMD, is it better to do it with annuity through the, you know, feds or just regular withdrawals?
Okay. Now, are you saying that when you say RMD, I usually relate that to money that you've let accumulate and grow and then you've not taken income on it until you hit 70 and a half?
Right, right.
Okay. What about your regular federal employees? You took that annuity option, took the income, right?
Well, when I retired, they give you some little pension, and I've just have the money I accumulated in the TSP.
Okay, so you're talking about your TSP program.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. TSP is a different animal than the federal pension because, like PERS, I'm one of the few advisors that will say on the air, if I have a client who has PERS or has the federal pension and they have an option of taking the federal pension annuity or the PERS annuity, it's always better than what we can do. I mean, I just tell my clients, take that. It's a great option. We're not gonna be able to beat it. But on TSP, that's a whole different story. I do a lot of rollovers with those. And what I would suggest to you to do is to either meet with your financial planner or meet with me, but have somebody give you an analysis of that TSP, what they could do for you, and have you take your minimum distribution or income. The real key question here is, is your pension good enough where you're paying income taxes now?
Yeah.
Okay. So you don't really want to take that income and pay taxes then?
No.
Okay. Then I would suggest you to sit down with an advisor, figure out a way to set that up into an investment portfolio so that you can just take the minimum out that you have to take out. And you will have a lot more money in it than you would the other way, because the TSP has such limited investment options. You really can't protect yourself in that in a down market. You can go to safety and just stay in the minimum preservation one they have, but it doesn't pay much. You know,
That's what I'm in now.
Yeah. And so I would suggest you sit down with somebody, particularly if it's a fair amount of money. I would sit down with somebody and design a plan to take your required RMD and just draw it out gradually.
Okay.
You'll end up with more money.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you. Really good question. We've got another caller, Russ from Washington County on. Russ, are you there?
Yes, sir.
How can we help you?
Well, first, I think it's a great show. Your advice is just top-notch. I'm kind of a small personal investor, and I had some – I don't own any stocks now, but I did own AT&T stock purely for the dividends. You know, the dividends keep going up every year for like 30 years.
Yep.
And it just seemed like rock solid. But then I pulled out pretty close to the top of the market, because they've been spending a lot of big cash like a drunken sailor. And I thought, well, I'm not too sure how safe that dividend is. And I couldn't find anything on the Internet. And I just wondered what you thought about the safety of the dividends on the AT&T stock.
Well, I'm just taking a look at the dividend right now, and it's about $1.88 per share, and because the share price is where it's at, that's about 5.5%. That's not a bad dividend. Their stock really very similar to a lot of stocks as far as volatility, but again, AT&T is a pretty big company. I don't foresee them shutting their doors down anytime too soon. So I think it's a volatile stock. If you buy the stock for the dividend, it's been relatively flat for almost 10 years. And I say that because if you go back to, you know, when it really hit the highs were in the early 2000s. And that stock hit a high here on September 07, and it's never got back there. It was at 42.31, and it's sitting at 34.66.
Mm-hmm.
So it's never gotten back. So if you bought it for the dividend, that's one thing. And I tell people there's a lot of good stocks you can buy for the dividend.
Mm-hmm.
Just realize you're going to have volatility in the principal. Mm-hmm. But if you're buying it for the income, it's like buying a CD. You know, you're buying it for the income. The only thing is on a stock, you can lose money. But if you hold on to it, you know, long enough, it's kind of came back, but now it's kind of going back the other way. I'm not sure that stock is going to recover back to where it was in its heyday back to 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, it was really up there.
Was there anything you have on your computer programs that can really look at the cash that's there versus the cash that wasn't, you know, that was there, say, 5 years ago before they started spending all this money for CIP projects?
Oh, you mean on as far as looking at the expenditure of a stock? No, but not really. I'm sure there are places you can go to get that information. But what I would do is I would look at what the people who are studying that thing and there's let me see if I can find it here for you, because there are people who are constantly looking at that stock. There are people who are analysts, and they have analyst opinion of the stock, and they go into all that in pretty much detail.
What I used to see on the Internet was the big cash hoard they talk about at AT&T. And then for the last couple of years, there's no talk about the cash hoard. And it just seems like they're spending money for the, you know, broad the spectrum and doing all kinds of things. I bought the Spanish telephone company. And it seems like a lot of money going out. And I just wondered if that dividend's going to be there. I mean, they've raised the dividend every year for the last 29 years. And, you know, if you're spending all your cash, you just wonder.
Yeah, yeah. I got to tell you, I would be concerned about that too, because I think technology is going to go one way or the other, and I don't think it's going to be in the ground. I think it's going to be, you know, I think the satellite dishes. I mean, even now, the speed of your internet, the phone, everything is through cell towers or, you know, in the air. It's not in the ground. And I think a lot of these companies that have put a lot of money in the ground are going to end up regretting that they did that, because they're not going to get used as like they think they are. But AT&T isn't a
panelist that covers AT&T stock.
Yeah, if you go on Yahoo Finance,
yes,
go to yahoofinance.com, and just type in the symbol T. You can go in there and you can see analysis opinions and their estimates of the stock.
Okay.
And those guys are brutal. I mean, they're not on AT&T's payroll. Okay, so they're paid to make intelligent decisions. And I tell people, look, if you aren't checking out the stock you're buying, you're wasting your money. You've got to check the stock out.
Oh, yeah.
And I think what you're doing is exactly right, Russ.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, sir.
You bet. Thank you. You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Great question. Thank you. You know, that's what this program's all about, Carl. You know, we get people calling in, asking a question. Hopefully we helped Russ. And hopefully, you know, there's maybe, you know, 20 or 30 other people out there, or maybe 100 people out there that have the same question, maybe about a different stock, then go look at it. And I got to tell you, I use Yahoo Finance, and I love Yahoo Finance because they're pretty middle of the road in what they say, and they'll they'll release financial information that maybe the White House might like or the other political party might not like, but they still release it because it's their opinion. And they just did an article yesterday, and if you can go on Yahoo Finance and look at it, it's called Negative Interest Rates Coming to America. You got to understand, Europe's had several countries go negative on their interest. We did it one time in 08. When the market crashed, we were actually negative on our treasuries. I'm just telling you, you better look at it. You better read it. Knowledge is power. You better realize what you may have to do, and you better have a strategy in your investment portfolio to protect you from those things, because we're going to have some volatile times. We're going to continue. And as I was saying before, if you go back and you look at the Dow closed at 14,164.53. On just this week. Well, there's our call. I'm not going to get to talk about it, but if you want to know, Carl, how somebody get a hold of you?
You can reach me at 503-255-8795 or at warrenallen.com.
And you can reach me at 503-253-3000 or toll-free 877-50-PRICE and on the web at pfgwm.com. Again, if you go to my website, I have some very good articles there on risk and reward. You need to know it. I also have a video on structured CDs, and I'll tell you, they beat the crap out of any annuity I've seen, and they're FDIC insured. They're really great because you can sleep at night. You don't have to worry about your money. They're insured. There's also one there on Seminar on Demand on Social Security. And if you don't have your Social Security planned, the government will do it for you. It's kind of like your trust or your will. If you don't do planning, the government takes care of it for you, don't they, Carl?
They do. They
absolutely
do.
Well, thank you for listening to Investor Simplified. Next week, we'll have Harry Dent on the air. Be there.
Simplified.